Good evening, everybody. This is a little bit of a different episode. It's just me, your second host, Colin, tonight. Alex is not going to be here, but we do have two special guests. So we're going to be talking about a different game, City of Five Sails. So to talk with me about that, we have David Lapp, the CEO of Pinebox.
Hey, howdy.
And Tom Brown, who was playtest lead and worked on the design.
Hello.
So, thank you guys for being here. I know where, you know, I was interested in the game already, and then there was some serendipitous timing that y'all are going to be right next to the Rivals, booth at, or the play area, rather, at Gen Con. So it just seemed like a even more natural fit.
Yeah, we were pretty happy about that because we feel like it's a very similar style of game in release schedule, and has a little bit of elements from that I think those players will enjoy. And I think right now there's kind of been an opening in this style of expandable card game market that people want more to see more of that.
Yeah, definitely. I do, like you said, I think there's some nice commonalities, but like they also very much do not feel like the same game, which is, you know, so it's like there's if you're interested in one, you'll probably be interested in another, but it's not like, you know, oh, I'm just playing the same game twice.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Cool. So let's start with people who may not be familiar. Can you give us, you know, just kind of a quick introduction to the world of 7C? Because 7C is originally a role-playing game, right?
Correct. For people that don't know, too, like where we got started was continuing the Doomtown card game, which is based on the Deadlands role-playing game. So AEG had done Doomtown back as a collectible card game. They had also done 7C. So it's kind of nice for us to continue in the same route that they did in bringing back these IPs in cardboard form. So 7C, again, with AEG, was their role-playing game that had come out in 1999 and then was re-released as a Kickstarter in the second edition that updated the storyline. And that's we're kind of mimicking that with the card game as well. The card game is going to be more centered on characters, where the original CCG was centered on ships. So in the world of 7C, it's very familiar to people who are fans of like Three Musketeers, Pirates of the Caribbean, Princess Bride. You know, it's like that sort of world. Like 1668 Europe is the best thing we can compare it to. So how we got this going was we went to Chaosium, who now has the role-playing game, and kind of, you know, talked to them about this idea, what we were doing with Doomtown, what we want to do with this. And that's where it all originated from.
Cool. Yeah. And this is set, I think, specifically in the City of Five Sails, which if I remember right, is it's basically like a city, sort of a free city bordered by like, you know, five different countries, so it has like all different, it's sort of a melting pot of different, you know, flavors and themes, right?
Yes, and we're calling it, we have to be very specific in saying this is City of Five Sails, because when we just say Five Sails, again, people are going back to the ships, so we wanted to make that very specific. There's a few reasons why that's the setting. One is that it's kind of open to this development that, you know, it's a lot of free range story to tell. There is a Welcome to Five Sails adventure that we have pulled elements from. So fans of the game that have seen that will recognize elements we used. For instance, there's an event card called Peña Shows the Way, and that's what Peña does in the story. So yeah, it's not a, you know, we've got five nations in the game, but we're using the word faction because you're playing a leader from the nation, but like you're not there, they're not there representing the city, they're there trying to take control of it. So you're playing one of five, at least in the initial core set, leaders that are there, one from five different nations. For those that know 7C, we're doing Vidachi, Asura, Castile, Montaigne, and Aizen.
So it's more of like a background where they kind of, you know, where they're from and what their flavor is, not like you said, not like, you know, oh, this is the Castile, you know, nation. And because I think Castile in particular, right, like she's like a pirate kind of outlaw, right? Not, you know, so really not officially representing.
Yeah. So Celine Elgato is our pirate that you can play off of the core set, who's actually my favorite leader to choose.
Cool. Yeah. Well, she's been my favorite too, so I'm in good company.
Yeah. So the city is a melting pot, as we were saying. That being said, it is a free city, and it gets all the nations, but it's also a trade port, so you get everybody there, so you can see everybody from everywhere.
So how that leads into, since there's other nations, we have them represented in the city deck. So Rivals fans will recognize that concept. Like that game, there's a communal deck that pops up in the three locations. So every turn, there's mercenaries, attachments, and events. And those will be random from that deck that you can interact with, and represents things going on in the City of Five Sails.
Yeah, and I, because that was one of the things that I noticed, because, you know, Rivals was, I think, the first game that I really played with a city deck, and then I saw this one, and it's interesting because, like, they both have a city deck, but at the same time, it feels very different, because in Rivals, you know, the city deck is all the mortals, and you're sort of collecting them. They're, like, kind of objects to, I don't know, kind of attack, or, like, they're sort of objectives, whereas in Five Sails, you know, it's, like, mercenaries you can recruit, or equipment you can sort of you know, obtain, and yeah. it's interesting because it's like the same mechanic, but it feels like you're using it in sort of a different way. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's just kind of, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Correct. Yeah.
So okay, so we talked about the city deck, and also different. So like in, you know, much like in Rivals, there is a city sort of in the center, and then your home, you know, back in the back where you're a little more protected. But unlike Rivals, Five Sails has city locations. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the locations work and you know, movement and stuff like that?
Yeah, we can definitely talk about that. So we have the city locations, which are right now the main areas where the conflict happens. And that's going to be the Forum, the Grand Bazaar, and the docks. And specifically, you have your characters move into the city from home to a location, or from a location to location. You maneuver around during the day, so you can control different locations, engage in different conflicts. In this case, use a mechanic that we call pressure, which is a act of trying to control the city, which can gain you renown, which is one of the ways to win, is by collecting 7 renown. But how the movement works, since you did touch on that, is you can move from home to anywhere in the city and you're still ready to go. But if you move from a city location to another city location, your character becomes engaged from undead. So they attack, which is big, because your character can't do anything because they're not ready if they've become.
Yeah, right. Like a lot of actions, I know you need to engage or cards. Yes. So yeah, that, I think the move mechanic is cool, because it's definitely more positional than Rivals. You know, Rivals, you're either in the streets or not. And here it makes a lot of difference, like when you move to a location, which locations you move to, because, you know, another thing is, so like Rivals is you take your turn, right? You do your 2 actions and whatever other abilities, and then it's the next player. Whereas City of Five Sails, got to make sure to get that right, is you go back and forth, you know, so it's a lot more,
yes.
I would say a lot more reactive, right?
Yeah. So that's a big thing in the game, is that back and forth, because you have to advance your plan and stop your opponents, which one of the characters that we have, or one of the leaders in this case, Celine Elgato, very much is a control what your opponent's doing kind of person, whereas some of the other leaders aren't. So you also get that dynamic as well, with that I go, you go style of play. that I think is very big. I think it leads to a lot of interesting effects.
Doomtown players will recognize that the back and forth and the movement is very similar in the rules, except instead of building a city, it's already in play.
Yes, that is very much true. Which I think is also something that is nice, is that the city is already there. You're not trying to expend resources to build the city. You're already there. And that's the other thing about our city deck. With our locations, is each location has a different thing from the city that you can go get. So you're also having to plan your turn based on, do I want to go recruit a mercenary? Well, they're in the docks. There might not be renown on the docks this turn. So you also have to plan that way.
Right, because yeah, I know you mentioned getting renown on the city locations, but we didn't really talk about how that happens. I think for the most part, that happens via your approach deck, which as a former Thrones player, feels very much like the plot mechanic, or at least scratches that same itch of like, I bring my little deck and I get to pick what I'm doing for the turn. But in this case, it not only has whatever ability, it also puts renown, which are like victory points, out in the city for you to contest, which I think is really a really cool mechanic. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so we do. We have the approach deck, which I think is a very interesting thing, because every turn you're going to pick both a character and a scheme. And the scheme is going to tell you where you want renown to be placed that turn, as well as give you an effect. It might be an immediate, it might be an action you can take, but it's generally something there. And then you also have a character that you're going to muster. So you're saying, I want to have this character, which I think is also very different than a lot of games, is for the most part, you don't buy characters from your deck. You get them. So you bring a crew in your approach deck and you recruit your crew from there. And then you pick up mercenaries from the city, which means that you don't have an infinite number of people. You've got your leader, and then a few people that you are gonna that you can bring out each turn, and then whoever you can get from the city. And that's kind of what's limiting as well for actions, or for controlling the city, because it's a check and balance between you and your opponent.
Yeah, we call it escalation in playtest, with the idea being that you're building towards the inevitable conflict. So you're going to have maybe a round or two of trying to outmaneuver each other. And then eventually it'll be, you get into these combats. Not to say you can't just do it in the beginning, but that was the idea. It was that each turn, you're getting more guys are kind of showing up until you get to a win condition.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing that it's, again, for the Rivals folks, it feels sort of like, if you had your faction deck was all like you can pick whichever one you want, but you get one every turn, and that's kind of the limit. And like you said, I agree. I think it sort of builds up because you start with, which again is so similar feeling to Rivals a lot of the time, where you start with just one, then next turn you usually have two, and then you kind of slowly build. And also one of the things I think is interesting is that it makes getting somebody, one of your characters defeated, very impactful, because that's you only get one turn, right?
Yeah, we wanted it to be important that the characters matter. So when you're going into a fight, there's complications.
And really, the game is telling a story about the characters that you're bringing, your leader and their characters. You're telling their story of them trying to vie for control of the city. And we really wanted that to be the focus, was your leader and their crew. It's like this is who you are. This is the characters you're bringing with you. Here you go. They matter. Each one is special and different and important. Like a party of characters in an RPG. Each person's important. Each person's special. And we wanted that feeling. So when you lose a character, it matters.
For sure. And if you lose your leader, you lose the game, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, we have three win conditions, assassination, dominance, and economic. Is that what we call the third one?
Yes.
With the idea being taking out the leader, controlling all three locations at the end of the turn, or the base one, which is gathering the most renown. So if you have seven at the end of the turn, not tied, mind you, you're the victor. And then it goes, we have a maximum of five rounds. So the game has a built-in timer.
There's inevitability to it.
Right. So then I think the last sort of set of mechanics we haven't really touched on is combat, which...
Yeah, that's the best part.
Right, which is a very big, complex thing, and very, very interesting. So I know it's interesting because Rivals has you make an attack against somebody, they can block, you can play an attack card, you can play a defense card, and that's about it. But in City of Five Sails, it's much more of a. It's much more of a duel, like a sword duel, it feels very, very thematic to me, all those, like you were saying, swashbuckling movies.
And we tried to make it feel cinematic.
Yeah, it's a back and forth until one person decides, more or less, to stop it.
And really how it works is all the cards in your faction deck have combat values, which is Riposte, Parry, and Thrust. And what those do is they interact with a threat pool, either by riposting it, which is taking my threat and giving it to my opponent, parrying threat, which is getting rid of threat from a pool, or thrusting, which is adding threat to your opponent's pool. And you get to go back and forth doing that and taking wounds until all the threats are solved. Because even if someone's dying, there can still be threat. They can make a final lunge. And we wanted that swashbuckling feel with that. And I know that we worked really hard to get that back and forth feel with playtest and then design. And it's down to the point where it's like a mini game to some extent, because you have a pool of tokens that are your threat. And those are moving back and forth and adding to your character and being taken away. So it's kind of this fun little mechanic, and then each faction plays with it a little different as well.
And right now, if you go to pineboxentertainment.com, at the top there is a 7C tab that you can go down, and if you have Tabletop Simulator, you can get the mod for free to check it out. And then we have our Discord server link there. You just kind of come on and say you're looking for a game, because we found the best way to teach the combat is to show people. If I were working on some videos too, that can kind of illustrate that.
Right. Yeah. And it is, the combat is really cool because, I think it's like, especially, you talk about escalation, like you get later on in the game, you have lots of characters out, there's always the tension of like, when do I claim and stuff. And so it's like this kind of all this tensions building, and then you have a combat and it's like this burst of action back and forth. And, sometimes it's very quick. Because you're just like, well, it's only it's only two wounds, I can take that. Or sometimes it's I can't lose this character, and it's this big back and forth battle.
Yeah, like we said, there's only five turns, but like once you get five characters out, like those turns take a while because each guy can do something, and then if you have ways to on guard them, which is our straighten mechanic, like. Those are all things that you're going to do to kind of extend the turn. Now, both of you can pass and just go to the next turn, but there's reasons to kind of like go after the renown points or grab the stuff that comes out in the city deck. So we kind of discourage that by, leaving the things up that you can grab.
Yeah. And one of the other big things about that is if you don't go and get the renown, it stays around. So you really have to be mitigating. Am I going to pick up renown or am I going to leave it? Maybe my opponent can get it next turn. Maybe not. So it gets to a point where it's inevitable that there's going to be an end, or either that's a five turns or someone's going to win because they get a renown.
And each faction plays a little different. Like the Musketeers in Montaigne, they actually kind of want to pass to get a board built up a little of renown because they have ways to move it around and defend. Where like Vodachi, that's a little more control, might want to go in quick and grab them. Or like Usura, that might want to try for like assassination. So they're just trying to hold you off from getting the big spots and build up a bit. So there's a lot of different ways you can play it.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've noticed too in the starter decks, is they all feel different, while still playing the same game, which I think is, you know, one of the hardest things to do when you want to have sort of multiple victory conditions and multiple styles, is to make sure that they all interact meaningfully. And like you said, because of the way that Renown works, like even if you're trying for an assassination, you have to care about Renown, because if your opponent gets to seven before you can assassinate the leader, then, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So you're still like actively blocking what they're doing while trying to advance like your own win. And each faction is designed to have two of the three win conditions as viable. Like, I mean, granted, all three always are, but we wanted to make sure each one could focus on two of them.
So like we've mentioned Vodachi several times, which is a control style deck. And one of the ways that they really excel at winning is by dominating the city. So they control all three of the locations because they're good at that. They're kind of control-y. They can do some stuff to do that. So they get all of the locations. It's one of the ways that they're designed. Whereas for Montaigne, which we mentioned with the Musketeers, it's not as easy for them because they are very synergistic with each other. They want to all be together, so it's hard to separate them out to do that. Take all three locations. So they're more of a renown style. I'm going to collect renown. And that's just the way that they work. And we tried to make each of those feel different.
Right. So, yeah. So we've talked about Vodachi. We talked about the one we just talked about, I just immediately blanked on. And we talked about Castile a little bit, who's a little bit more tricky and... You know, I would say a little more on the control side, I think. And then there's Usura, who is Yevgeny, who's just a big he's mean sick. Man.
Yeah, anybody that played the Legend of the Five Rings Crab Clan is like, you know, what we could equate it to. So you're doing, I feel like he's got a decent amount of like control or anti-control mixed with, you know, trying for assassination. Like, I know in playtests, I had a fair amount of Vodachi versus Yevgeny games. So, like, basically, Vodachi would be trying for, you know, going for the three, try to control and to make a setup, and then Yevgeny would have potentially some answers to that. And it's very mind game-ish, too, because you do have to pay attention to the three win conditions kind of at all times. Because you can leave an opening for your opponent to snag all three locations without even realizing it.
Which was something we found out in playtest, that if you weren't being mindful of there's three locations you can win by taking all three, it just happens. Your opponent just goes, oh, well, I have all three now.
And you have to end the turn like that. It's not an insta, so yeah. It's all telegraphed.
Yeah, it's the only one that's not an end of turn currently for the victory is the assassination. Otherwise, you have to end the turn in order to win the game with the other two.
Which is a cool... So, yeah, it's got this cool tension also of, you know, I need to do my things and act, but also I don't want to commit everything right away because that leaves my opponent open to sort of do whatever they want as they respond. So then the fifth faction we haven't touched on, Aizen, who are the... You know, we've referenced L5R. They're dragon to me, right? Like, lots of attachments, lots of...
Yeah, they're very attachment, very getting people, like, they're all mercenaries. They interact probably the most with the city deck and probably has the most kind of apparent combos, I would say.
They do. They interact with the city a lot. They want mercenaries. They want attachments. They kind of just want to be the military. Because all their guys, once you put attachments on them, are good in combat or good at taking a location. But they're not better than like Evgeny. They're just not as good as him out of the gate. Or they're not as good at defending as, say, Montaigne is at the gate. They got to kind of build towards it. But because they like all the mercenaries and all the attachments, they kind of can do that.
Yeah, you're right when you pointed out the dragon thing, because I think we've got pictures from playtests where, like, the leader or you know, whichever character has got, like, six attachments on them. And even though we have a, like, limit, like, one attire, one weapon, one armor, like Doomtown, you can still have, like, trinkets and artifacts and things like that, or, like, dark gifts in his case.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. I also think it's interesting because, so, like, I'm normally a player who bounces around and plays, like, lots of different factions. I'm not normally wedded to one, but, like, it's really funny too, because even just on the, you know, on the mod, like, not being able to see any of the art, like, I already found myself drawn to certain factions. Like I said, Selene is definitely my favorite. And that's another, you know, I know there's a lot of Rivals players who love their clans, or, you know, certain clans based on who they played in the RPG. And so, like, that's another, you know, again, another sort of commonality, right? Is, like, I think that people will really find the faction or a couple of factions that they enjoy and just really kind of dive into it and identify or, you know, or link up with those, which is always really cool when you're playing a game, right?
That's something that we were trying to give that identity, that old school kind of L5R identity, where someone goes, I'm a Scorpion player. In this case, it's going to be, I'm an Aizen player, or I'm a Cern player, or whatever it ends up being. We wanted people to have that feel, that draw, that identity, that this is us. We are Aizen players. We are a Cern players. But also give it we're also City of Five Sails players. So we wanted, part of what we wanted to do was build that camaraderie, and then build also that love of a faction. And part of that goes into the story, and part of that's going to be play styles, and part of that's going to be art. But we wanted to build to that, because I think from our standpoint and what we were looking at is a lot of us played those old games. I know Lat was a big Scorpion player. He played L5R. I played old L5R and even the new L5R, and I was a big Dragon player. But we wanted to build that camaraderie, and we wanted to make it a community as part of that. So part of when we were designing is we wanted to make sure that everyone felt different enough that you could choose that. You can be like, yeah, we like this character. Like you're saying, you're drawn to Selene, so Castile. We wanted you to be able to go, wow, that's my faction. Or I like that faction enough. That's going to be what I play most. Kind of like even with Doomtown.
Yeah, we had a little bit of it with Doomtown, but like faction identity hadn't really picked up as a concept. But it did. I mean, it did to an extent that probably any of the games like this would. We just kind of wanted to do it a little more focused like that with 7C if we could. And there's no like allying options. Like you have your faction cards and the neutrals, and that's it.
Yeah. So going forward, that was another kind of question. You know, like new stuff for the faction will come out. Like, I'm guessing the idea is, you know, like you have to pick obviously your leader, but then you can sort of pick any characters with that faction to be part of the crew. Is that sort of the idea?
Correct. Your approach deck has five characters and five schemes. So in the box, in the core set, we have, is it seven or eight characters?
Eight characters and two schemes.
So you have five out of eight to choose from for your deck. And then in the schemes, you don't have to use your faction ones.
And we have 10 neutrals in the core box. So you get 12 schemes to choose from for each faction.
So you could forgo, you know, your faction ones if you wanted to, but ideally we felt we made them cool enough that you would want to play them.
Right. Yeah, that again, you know, back reminded me of Thrones, of like you have your faction plots, and like they don't necessarily go, like every faction plot doesn't go in every single deck of that faction, but like if you're playing that faction, you probably want to include at least one or two, because they'll be cool, they'll be splashy, and they'll play into obviously what you're doing, right? And the approaches, I think, feel the same way, or the schemes rather, feel the same way.
I would say from when I played Thrones, the difference would be, if I remember right, there was an income, and there was your initiative, and cards. Was that the three things?
There was initiative and claim, which was, you know, like when you made a challenge, how much happened, you know, how many characters you killed or whatever. And then, in second edition, there was also your hand limit was basically another thing on the card.
So in this case, as far as the schemes go, they're going to give you where renowned place, an ability, and then they're also going to modify what we call the panache value, which is on your leaders, which is effectively how many cards you draw each turn. Some schemes add none, some take away, some add based on what the scheme does. So like one of the big examples, you have a scheme that allows you to wound one of your characters to make them on guard, or wound one of your characters to make an opponent engage, but you get less cards for the turn. And in this case, this game plays by spending cards from your hand. They're your resources. It's not necessarily money, but it's resources. So let's give an example of Montaigne. The leader for that faction, Odette, has a high panache. In fact, one of the higher starting ones in the core set. So she has a tendency to have a lot of resources. But if she plays Appealing to the People, she'll now have less, which means she might be on par with Castile. Well, now it's a very different game, because it's affecting your resources. So the schemes will do all kinds of stuff like that. So they do a little bit of everything, as well as what we have is an initiative value, which is who gets the first player token, who acts first in the turn, which is also on that scheme. And there's a huge range of them. I think right now we have, in the core set, we have a 1, and I think we have a 79.
Yeah, the idea was that we would make cards that would go in between those values from 0 to 100 was the initial thought.
And that's another, because I know it's probably only a few effects right now, but I did think it's kind of interesting. There are some cards that, you know, either want you to be first or second or differ based on that. So it's, you know, it's not like going first is not necessarily always better. Going second is not necessarily always better. You know, it's very much as a play style kind of thing.
There's actually, we had a lot of philosophy going back and forth on that in design, because going first, when we said the items come up from the city deck, if you're going first, it kind of guarantees you can get the thing you want. But going second means you get to see what your opponent is doing. So it's there's some people that feel going second is always better, and then others feel like, well, first is always better because of that choice. So it really depends on kind of what you're doing with the turn and where you want to go with it. But Achi does a lot of time walk stuff where you can kind of delay actions and make your opponent do stuff first. So to him, you know, getting the first action might not matter.
Whereas someone like Kaspar, who's very dependent on items and mercenaries, they might want to have that first choice. They might want to go first, which will also dictate what you can do scheme-wise, because you can't choose that scheme that's... There could be a super cool scheme that goes last or goes very low on the initiative. Well, now I'm going to decide, is that really cool effect better for me than going first and a less cool effect?
Right. Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's just a cool mechanic. And like I said, especially as somebody who really, Thrones was basically my primary game for quite a while, I'm real excited to see it resurface in a different way, for sure. But a lot of the same kind of choices, right? Of that strategic choice of like, am I trying to go first or second? And do I play the big effect versus do I try to get the, you know, the initiative or whatever? Yeah, it's just pretty cool. So, I also want to make sure to touch before we go. I want to make sure to touch on, I know we talked about, you know, I think Tom, you talked about building a community and the story stuff. I wanted to touch on, yeah, like, you know, asking about, is there an ongoing storyline and like player influence on story? Cause I think that's a thing that's happening at Gen Con. And so I wanted to make sure we talked about that as well.
Yeah. So we've got fiction that's supposed to be going up this week, actually. Nancy Sawyer that wrote for, I know we keep mentioning NF5R, but I know she did work there, wrote the Montaigne story that's going to be the rulebook story. And we've got one for each faction in the works with an extended one going on for Yevgeny, who's the focus. He's the Asurian that's the focus of the Gen Con story. And then we've got one specifically around a character in the city deck that's the focus on the ongoing story. What's going to happen is our general idea, and I'm trying to I might be misspeaking because I kind of saw something for Rivals that might be similar with these Conclave events. But someone at Gen Con can hopefully correct me next door. So you'll find in that city deck we made that there are 30 cards, and they're all numbered 1 through 30. So what we're going to do is pick a card, say a character or event or attachment, and the number. And players can influence the next card of that number. So in the next, you know, OP kit that we do, it can be you'll get these influenced cards, and then players will have votes for participation and for winning. So the idea is that this city deck will evolve, and then casually you can play, you know, whatever you want for number 26, but we will have like the official city deck for events. And then furthermore, this isn't going to be a Gen Con, but we have this for some future events. The idea being that of the five leaders, we're going to have preset city decks on the tables for the cut rounds. And if there is a leader not represented, like in top eight, a version of the leader will be in the city deck for you to recruit. So, and then you would get that card, like for being at the event. So that's the idea behind kind of how we're using the city deck to advance the story.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Cause I know story is a big thing. A team make Yevgeny a villain, by the way, for anybody out there.
we're doing Yevgeny hero villains, the choice, but the idea is, you know, like there might be a mercenary in the city deck that joins a faction, and that would open up that number, you know, for another card.
Yeah, that's something that's pretty cool. So, you know, the ongoing story thing is real cool. I'll definitely have to check out those, you know, those stories and stuff.
Yeah, we're going to tie in a lot with the RPG because we know Chaosium has talked about plans for a 5 sales box set. So, you know, when they get to that, it'll be a lot of crossover between the role-playing game and the card game.
Cool. And so then I know you mentioned events. So like, are there currently plans for organized play? You know, and if so, like kind of what are they?
We had a halt on Doomtown because of the COVID that hasn't continued yet. Also, we did a Kickstarter for the Weird West edition, which also, if you go to Pinebox Entertainment, is the Pledge Manager is still up at the top. We were pausing on that till we ship it. It's in production now. We're actually doing an unboxing video at Gen Con next week so we can improve everything. We did seasonal events, kind of like Rivals is doing right now with the Prince of the City as something seasonal. That's where we're looking at for 5 sales. So it would follow the same route as Doomtown with these seasonal events, and then conventions would be... we have them tiered actually on the website right now in the floor rules. Tom, you can correct me, but I think we started naming them already. So like Doomtown used to have badge prizes. I mean, we still do that. We have Marshall and Constable, and we tie them to conventions. So like where you have prints for Rivals, we're doing, I think Festivals is the name of our regular tournaments. And then we have like Parlay of Nations is one of the like names of one of the convention ones. So yeah, so that's the general idea, is to do something like they're doing right now with those Prince events, but you'd see them ideally twice a year, basically splitting first season, first half of the year, second season, second half, then you've got the summer convention season. So the conventions would be, you know, the major tournaments in between. PAX Unplugged is probably going to end up trying to be a big one for us, just because we're over here near Philly. And we've got a good relationship with them. That this year we've got like our own tournament section, kind of like what we're doing with Gen Con too. But yeah, that's our general organized play plans. And I think as far as the game production, Rivals players would probably like that we're doing a similar format in, you know, like the one set every so often, not the use of, like some of these expandable games, even Doomtown Reloaded had these rapid fire, Rolling Thunder style releases of like a pack every 6 weeks. Well, we're going to do more of these collected sets. So where Rivals, you're, because Vampire has the clans that, you know, they have had to add on, you know, we could even add more nations from 7C because they're not just the five. So we can add leaders to the existing ones in addition to opening up like a whole new faction.
Cool. Yeah, that's like you said, that does sound pretty similar to Rivals, which I, you know, I appreciate. I know that I feel like the expandable game has been, people have been kind of trying to figure it out, but I do think that this sort of model of a somewhat bigger box, a little bit spaced a little bit more out, I think it works pretty well. I'm a fan. So
one thing we always point out with Doomtown is like, it is a board game. It really is. Right. Like, we doing all the organized play stuff, like, is just us wanting to make it more than it is, you know, where really that's what, you know, people say about being a card game, but 7C, we kind of feel the same way. Rivals, I kind of feel the same because the multiplayer aspect of it is, it seems like a, you know, getting people together to play a board game than it is, you know, scheduling like a card game night or something.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all about kind of like what people are at. You know, it can be like a stage of life thing, right? Like, people that can still do the collectible card games. Like, I'm playing Flesh and Blood. I know there's some other people are that, you know, you're able to do the collectible part, but I just kind of borrow cards because I don't have the time for that. Where, you know, Rivals was good because I know I was taught the game in October and had not even opened the stuff to look at it till going to Gen Con now. And you can kind of do that with a fanable card game, you know? So I like that it's easier to keep up with.
Yeah, for sure. It's also easy to kind of, you know, take a step back, you know, maybe if you get busy, you can come back in and not feel like you just missed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I must admit, like, I picked up the core set for Rivals. I have yet to play the game.
Well, hey, if you want to learn at Gen Con.
Yeah, I kind of put out there on the Rivals stuff too. It's like, hey, like, I know they've got, you know, we're a very, very small indie publisher. You know, they're more established. So I know like their area next to us is like twice as big, but I'm sure they're dedicating it to like several games. So I said, you know, if they don't have the room, you know, we're going to have areas in the back of our section for anybody that wants to do pickup games for anything. So I'm like, hey, since I know I've got players that play Rivals, if people want to, you know, sit and hang out, our section is very open for that.
Cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
One thing I always say about, you know, we talk about building communities. It's like, we know that there's a lot of games out there. We just want you to play our game too.
Right. Yeah. It's not a competition. It's a you know, a family kind of thing, right? Like everybody, community. I mean, community is a good word for it. You know, I'm interested in both these games. I mean, obviously I'm interested in Rivals, I'm interested in 7C, and I'm looking forward to probably carrying both forward and yeah, that's to me, again, a big thing about the expandable games is like, I don't have to devote all of my free time just to keeping current in one or the other. I can right. play both, which is really nice. All right, well, we can probably start to wrap it up, but I did want to make sure to ask, you know, I think the debut event's at Gen Con, but then, you know, when are you expecting it to be sort of available to purchase and all that kind of stuff?
We're aiming And I'm trying not to lock in a date, but we are aiming for September 27th as the launch date. Just assuming we can get the video done at that time. We put on all our ads so far Q3 2022 because we don't want to lose that. Hey, we're showing everybody at Gen Con. Like, we want it to be not, you know, not directly after, because everyone's got to recover their wallets from going to that convention. So, right. Like, we figure, but we don't want it too far after, especially not into the holidays. So I think we have a good spot. You never know. You know, we have kind of been putting out there for a while that this was coming out, but it's mostly been to, you know, catering to the people that know the IP. We want to get out there to, like, hey, people that like swashbuckling things, like, check this game out, you know, more try to widespread. So we're hoping at Gen Con to get a little more exposure on that, even though we're like small fish, big pond. We're hoping that helps.
Yeah.
And we're going to be there doing demos as well for this game to build attention at Gen Con. I think we've got demos.
Oh, yeah. There is, I think on the tickets, it's like 10 an hour almost that we're doing, and they're all full or close to all full. But that doesn't mean, yeah, like we put these time slots for an hour, but no one's going to have a full hour demo. So as long as we have people around, like anybody coming by, hey, you can get like the 5-minute version, or, you know, as long as we have people, we can sit you down and go through the whole thing.
For sure. And, you know, especially if you're coming in a group, right? Like if somebody has a full demo and then, you know, then you go sit back in those tables and, you know, play a quick game or, you know, or half a game or whatever with your friends. I know that's a big.
Yeah, because we'll have like, we'll be selling the starter decks for people interested, just as a kind of intro, like, hey, if you like this and you want to take home something right now and show your friends, like, we're going to have them, and then people can just break them out and play in the back. Yeah.
Well, Tom and David, thank you guys for joining us. I'm definitely looking forward to playing City of Five Sails at Gen Con. So if you're going to Gen Con, definitely go check them out. They'll be right next to the Renegade organized play section. So it'll be easy. And if you're not, you know, yeah, go on to, I think you said Pinebox, the Pinebox website.
Pineboxentertainment.com.
So there you go. Thank you guys. And to everybody else, I don't have my traditional sign off is stay spooky, and that doesn't really exactly work for pirates. So I you know, stay swashbuckling. I don't really know. I'm open to suggestions.
There's undead pirates in 7C. So it is a thing.
There are.
There you go. All right. Good night.